Welcome to the post show.
So I brought a spritzer, like a little mini spritzer that, because I bought like I bought one from Amazon and it came in a pack of three.
Yeah.
So I was like,
I appreciate it. I've been wanting to get one of these for my absinthe for forever. And Greg handed me this tiny little spritzer and I was like, oh yeah, I wanted that. And I had to ask Greg, what's this for? I couldn't remember in the heat of the moment.
I know, I get that. That happens to me all the time where I'm like, what is that thing? But no, it is. Yeah, you can definitely smell the absinthe on here. This is an improved whiskey cocktail, right?
One of my favorite drinks, improved whiskey cocktail, is traditionally made with rye whiskey. So I use the Michener's rye. Oh, I didn't put the cap back on. I'll do that here in a second. So let's say it's 2 ounces of rye, 1/2 ounce of Luxardo Maraschino liqueur, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, 1 dash of Peychaud bitters, 1 dash of Ango bitters. That's my twist on it. It's supposed to be just Peychaud bitters, but I like it with a 1/2 and 1/2. And then Luxardo cherry. And then now that I have a mister, I used to use a bar spoon of absinthe, but just squirt, squirt, 2 little pumps of absinthe on this thing. And it gives it, and that tiny little bit of absinthe I have left in that bottle will last me.
Oh, 2 years.
The rest of my days.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
I love this drink. Shannon likes old fashions better.
I really do like this a lot, but no, I just like the old fashioned.
The
absinthe accent
makes it like different enough to, I think, really separate it. I do think that sometimes if you just want that straight bourbon, then
yeah,
the old fashioned is what you go for.
And that's usually, if I'm in the mood for something other than a glass of wine or a beer, it's usually just bourbon, you know? So that's when I'm just like, I just want an old fashioned. I don't want anything else, just a simple old fashioned so I can sit and relax, watch the pit. And
my go-to non-fruited is a Manhattan. I think that just, you know, really simple to construct. You can also, I think adding a little bit of maple syrup instead of, you know, I think that just adds a little, like an extra dimension to it. And then you can also use one of those mini smokers to give it just some extra thing. So, yeah, I love a Manhattan, but I do think the whiskey, the improved whiskey cocktail is really nice.
No, it is.
Because of, you know, I think the light, like anisey note from the absinthe really helps bring out the other notes too. So it's really
I like it. It's just not something that, well, I'm also lazy.
Yeah, so, it takes more effort, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more involved. And if I just want whiskey, then I'm just going to make myself an old fashioned because I do love them. And 3 simple ingredients and you're done, you know?
Yeah. Well, my favorite cocktail is, and I only pull it out if I really, 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 really want one because I have not found any more green chartreuse. So the last word, if I can have some fresh lime, I really am, you know, I do a good job of extracting it and getting all of the pith out. That is what makes the last word, I think, the really important. It's really important to have the, you're going to be muted.
I was sneezing or coughing or something, so I muted myself.
Like, I think that, you know, that makes the last word so much better. I think, like, we, you know, when I brought it over, you're like, that's so much better than the guy at the bartender makes it. It was just because it was just making sure that the lime juice was super clean.
Yeah, yeah. But also when you make a paper plane, when your lime drinks are like, I usually don't think of going to like citrusy drinks until you make them. And then it's
true.
When you make paper planes and
words. And the thing about fruit juice drinks is you're supposed to aerate them really well. You have to shake them really nice and get them nice and aerated. And that adds a sort of lift to it. It just sort of fluffyizes the drink. And I just think that I love what a shaken drink does, but it is just more work to make, like you said. Like it's
yeah. I mean, usually when I mean, it's at the end of a work day mm-hmm. and I'm tired and I don't want to put a lot of effort into making a drink. So
what you should do, have you seen these freezer old fashions?
Yeah, I'm not going to do that though.
I don't see why you shouldn't though.
Why?
I mean, you shouldn't do it because it's too easy to drink all the old fashions, but you just mix it. You take a bottle, you take a cup out and you do whatever with that. But then you mix the simple and the Ango into the bottle, the bourbon bottle, and you put it in the freezer, and then you just pour out.
Oh, no, I guess I haven't seen that.
So you pre-make your old-fashioned. You can even freeze them in, like, chunks, right? And then
you can. I mean, Alton Brown has done ones where he's done freezer Negronis and stuff like that, or freezer Negronis. But so, it's the same kind of thing. It's a premix that you basically.
But not premix of, like, anything but the spirits you have. So you're making a legit drink. There's no extra, there's no like preservatives or shit goes in there. It's exactly what you would make for yourself. You just make a lot, you know, much more of it than mm-hmm. you would, and you freeze it. And
just like you meal prep for the week or something.
Yeah, you meal prep so your old fashions.
You need to meal prep my old fashions for me.
The downside is you always have like old fashioned on tap. You're like drinking old fashions every day.
Okay, probably not the best idea.
Yeah, and because alcohol, you know, doesn't freeze, so it just stays really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
no, but I think having a bottle of mixed up old fashions would be really handy. The trick is to not drink it in a day and a half.
To be like, to not have be like, hey, I just have an old fashioned. Have an old fashioned. Well,
it's like
one.
When you have homebrew on tap.
Yeah.
It's so easy to be like, I'm just going to have a glass. Oh, like, you know what? I'm going to have another half glass.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'll have another half glass. Mm. And then you're six glasses in. Mm-hmm. And if it was in bottles, you wouldn't have opened six bottles. So.
What are we listening to?
Oh, that was, I thought it'd be fun. I don't know if we want to do this. We could start a jam and you guys could all go on your Spotify and add stuff to it. That was Mother Love Bone.
Start a jam, sure.
This is Shangri-La.
Wait, start a jam.
Let me find out how to start a jam here. I haven't actually tried it. It always pops up trying to make me do jams.
I don't have Spotify, so.
Oh, you don't have Spotify?
No. Downloading that bullshit.
Okay. Well, then I don't know how to do a jam.
Well, you can just stop your play and I can play my song.
Yeah, you can play your song. You're still up. You're tuned up.
No, keep playing. I need to pick a song.
I don't even know that song. That was the next one.
Mm.
Let's go with the Misanthropic Drunken Lover from Days and Days. Maybe. No one's gonna like this song but me. It's the raspy, punky kind of stuff. Ooh. Oh, that drink is so good. I made a good improved whiskey cocktail.
Mm-hmm. You did.
Fuck yeah. When that drink hits good. Mm-hmm. All right. What's been going
on? Well, thank you for lasering my
for sure.
Water bottle. And I have UCB logo and my name on it.
Yeah.
Which is going to be cool. I'm sure I'll get noticed.
If other people want it, we can make fresh bottles or we can laser their bottles. I don't know, $20 a bottle for lasering.
All right. I mean,
on top of whatever. Yeah.
So if anybody asks, then I'll say, maybe.
It depends. I mean, if they want a bunch of different logos, then we got to charge.
By the way, I love this new wallet. This simplistic style. Have you seen, you know, you have the old design, but this new design is so good.
No, I really like the new design too.
It's got a couple things going
on. It has a wider mouth on it, I guess.
It has, first of all, it's a lock.
Well, it holds more. But it still fits in your cup holder.
Oh, yeah.
The handle is better.
Yeah, okay.
And also, you can open it with the handle up.
Yeah, mine's that way, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But ours aren't that bad. We're not that Stone
Age. No.
We're not that Stone Age.
The older bottles are great, but this is, like, the new version is like, even better.
It's definitely an iterative better process.
And it's got the taper, so it goes into the...
That's the biggest part of it, is it holds more liquid. And it still tapers and fits into, because our other Owalas hold more water, but they don't fit into our cup holders. So, yeah.
But like, I love the, you know, it's got a great vacuum on it. So like it stays cold for a long time.
It does.
So that's why I love that she's putting like a little bit of ice in it.
Yeah, just, that's pretty standard for all the double walled.
Sure, but now,
Awalas.
I've seen ones that just are sucky, and I had like plastic water bottles and other crap like that just aren't nearly as good as once I got this guy. I was like, this is so much better.
The Awalas stand the test of time.
But Shannon has Awala, Brewmate, Stanley, Yeti. I mean,
every one of them.
There's not a bad one in that bunch for
no, but I will say that Awala is the one that holds the ice and keeps it from melting longer than any of the others.
Probably, maybe what is it? The what is that? That brand that has that's Yeti. Yeti's
not that great, and they spill.
Yeti spill. I love the sip / gulp thing they have on here. This is such a good, the straw thing that's on the Awalas is so good.
I like agree. That. I am not trying to say Awalas aren't great. They're probably the ones that I have the most experience with, the ones I prefer. But I'm also trying to be open-minded. Mm-hmm. You know, Shannon has these Brewmates. They have, they're spill proof. I don't like the Brewmates. Here's why I don't like the Brewmates. They have a rubber. I'll stop. They have a rubber bottom, so they grip where they're sitting, but they're also this weird taper that makes them top heavy.
No, I'm playing.
Oh.
They have this weird top, so they always, like if you ever nudge them, like you want to like slide them across your counter, instead of sliding across the counter, they just come all over and just make a huge fucking, ruckus. And,
no handlebars.
They're nice. Look at me. We got a couple hydro flasks, hands in the air like it's good to be alive. And I'm a famous rapper, even when
the past are all crooked. I could show you how to do it. I mean, I can show you how to scratch a record. I can take apart the remote control, and I can almost put it back together. All of them. I can tie a knot in a cherry stem. I can tell you about Lee Erickson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American. Me and my friends are platypus. Me and my friend made a comic book. And guess how long it took? I can't do anything that I want. Because look, I can keep. Still gonna have ice no in it metronome, the next day.
No metronome,
but
no metronome.
Awala,
and I can see your face.
It's always
on the
a couple
telephone,
hours longer than any of the others. On the telephone.
I think they're really well made. Me, and they're not expensive. Just called to say that it's good to be alive. Being like such a small world, I'm all curled up with a book to read. I can make money, open up a thrift store. I can make a living off a magazine.
I can design an engine
64 miles to a gallon of gasoline. I can make new antibiotics. I can make computers survive aquatic conditions. I don't run the business. I can make you want to buy a product. Mover, shakers, and producers.
Me and
my
friends
understand the future. I see the strings that control the system.
I can do anything with no resistance because
I can lead an engine with the mic. They were doing like, with a like microphone, it was hard with a microphone, so like I would get a gimme question like when they were talking about this is here is a here I'm gonna tell you the band it was we're gonna show you the cover. What is the name of the band? Name the album.
Oh, that's hard.
And the one I got was Abbey Road. Everyone knows that ruins. But no, like, I mean, they had something with probably the guineas, like Eris without that. I didn't.
When we were camping, me, driving and I won't stop. The one dream. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure, my cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations,
turn them all dying exaggeration, have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like you, and I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite.
Especially with the Led Zeppelin catalog, and like start playing the song, and you get to put down which B-side, and you don't like make you realize like how much I don't know Led Zeppelin titles. Recognize the fuck out of the song,
right?
But is this like, is this in my time of dying, or is this in like 10 years gone? Like, because like I can't differentiate those two songs, you know, like. Didn't win. Didn't do great. And I was like, oh, wow. I thought I knew Led Zeppelin. I love Led Zeppelin.
I didn't get last place. I got second to last place, which is too bad because I would have gotten a hot dog if I got last place. You are up.
Oh, okay. This is a band called Too Many Zoos. These guys are fucking awesome.
Too many zoos.
They made their name in the New York City subway system. It's three guys.
You don't have to be that loud.
All right.
I didn't make you turn up the subway.
Right? It's a baritone sax player, a trumpet player, and a guy that plays like the bucket drums. But they're all like trained at like Juilliard kind of shit. And it's called Brass House Music. Anyway.
Well, we saw them live and it was awesome.
Yeah. The sax player's from Pittsburgh, but they made their fame in New York.
Well, I didn't get to complete my story about being at the trivia. At the trivia night, the guy sat down next to me near the end and we got into talking so much that I missed the last round. So I might have even done better, but who knows? It was a very interesting conversation with a guy who started talking about it because he was like a mushroom grower. So I forget exactly how it started, but eventually I was like, first of all, talking about, so I heard like oyster mushrooms are the easiest to make. We were just talking about that kind of stuff. And then we moved into, I mentioned I have a friend who has worked with some of the more interesting mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was asking,
AKA psychedelic.
Yeah. One of the things I was asking about was this friend of mine who made these mushrooms and I've had them. They didn't taste like shit. Whereas when I normally have psychedelic mushrooms, taste like shit. And I was thinking that maybe because this friend of mine who makes those psychedelic mushrooms makes them in like a barley system. Mm-hmm. And maybe that just makes it so like, cause normally you pick them out in like on like cow patches and it's going to taste like shit. He didn't have an answer for that.
Okay.
But
not one that he was willing to share.
He didn't know because he seemed to say like, no, they always taste like shit. He's a more
functional mushroom guy.
No, he seemed to say no. They always seem to taste like shit to me. So, but eventually the conversation got into other like topics and I got to really, this guy was weird. And he started like, going off on some very loose tangents. And so this was, eventually this guy turned out to be more of an alt medicine kind of guy. I was open to having the conversation, but one of the things that I notice is that like, it's often the people who, like me, are skeptical who are called closed-minded. Mm-hmm. I've never met someone, the more closed-minded people are not the skeptical people. The closed-minded people are the people who have made up, who are attached onto some sort of idea. Like, I'm always open, and I'm always, like, willing to find the part that matches up with something real. Mm-hmm. Like something weird is explained to me and I'm like trying to find the path to something real so that makes sense. Because he got into this stuff about, he talked about a device that he put on his wrist that vibrated, that he got from a doctor, that totally takes away all like stress and stuff like that he had. And I was, and I was just like, when he told me that, I was like, the only way that I know of for something like that to happen, where something takes away stress immediately, or he said like 15 minutes, it takes away all stress, is there are two ways that can possibly happen. One is with nootropic drugs, and two is with placebo effect. That's exactly it. Yeah. And so I'm like, which of these is it? And that's what I'm going to explain to him. Like, and then he's talking about, no, he has this doctor friend who has this device. He's also talking about, by the way, I should mention, he was like, I'm anti-capitalist, all this other stuff. He's telling me about this doctor friend. This device, first of all, is like $400 with a $100 a month fee. And like, you're anti-capitalist and this is what you're trying to convince me about? You know, what the fuck is that? But also, it's just like when he's telling me that, no, he's had students of his that have used this device and it worked on them. And I was like, well, that could totally be placebo effect because they're, what the teacher says. But also, like he said, no, it totally takes away my stuff in 15 minutes. I said, that doesn't make sense. And then eventually when I'm talking about it, he said, no, well, I've used this device for 12 years. And it's like, oh, okay, that's different. That is like a fidget toy or something. That is something that you're used to and that, your response to that is a brain. Like that totally makes sense. You conditioned yourself to be calmed by something. I mean,
there's nothing wrong with the placebo effect.
No, there is.
As long as
you appreciate the dishes,
it doesn't cost you money.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost you opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it is a net neutral, then sure, take the placebo effect. But if they're charging you $400 a month, they're charging you $400
a month, $400 initially.
$100 a month for your placebo.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit.
Yeah. You know, that was my argument. It's like, look, I can totally buy, especially after 12 years, that this thing helps you calm down just like a fidget toy does in the same way. And like that, like everything about that makes sense. Nothing about that seems like magical thinking. But the idea that these, you know, the subscription helps them tune the vibrations to you is bullshit. And then you started talking about vibrations and you got the lasers and shit. And I was like, careful. I know exactly how a laser works. Like exactly how a laser works. You're talking to the
lasers in it.
You're talking to the wrong guy if you're going to make a laser argument. And so it's it was weird how this turned into, and it wasn't like an argument. It never died into like an argument thing, but it was because you know I'm in a conversation like that. I'm very open, but I'm also going to tell them. I'm going to try to say, like, that doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Here's why I think that. And here, you know, but I'm totally willing to hear your story and believe that you experienced that 100%. But this is my take on what your experience was.
Right.
It's hard to deliver that and not feel like you're belittling their experiences, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I try to do it in a way that's like I'm open to hearing about it and I'm totally listen.
You
and
almost
I
need
will
to set your like foundation of like I am evidence based.
No, I do.
I am 1,000% evidence based,
and I make sure to say like the most important thing to me is that it's true, and everything else is secondary to whether it's true or not. And how can you show whether it's true or not? You can demonstrate it. You can demonstrate it repeatedly. And so I'm willing to buy anything as long as you can do that. And so open, and I'm also open to the possibilities. And I also, again, we talked about this before, not a realist in the sense that I understand the brain is always interpreting shit. And, you know, it's performing something for whatever it is that we are, this process that we call ego. And so like it's all some kind of projection of something that, and so it's like totally willing to accept things as long as they are demonstrable and repeatable, because that is how you demonstrate that something is true to the best of our ability. So that's what I care about. Mm-hmm. And the claim could be wild and out there, but it doesn't matter if you can demonstrate that it's true or show some reliability to the prediction.
Right. I mean, this comes back to if I have faith, my faith is in the thing called the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
It's a foundation. It's a framework that we build everything else off of. And so my faith is in the scientific method.
See, I think that my definition of faith is faith is literally is believing things without evidence.
Okay.
But
at your core, what you choose to believe.
No, I think I have faith in things like.
At some point,
reality doesn't change. Like, you know, like axiomatic things. The foundational elements of reality don't change.
We've said before, where if there is a scientific proof, or if fucking God gets on CNN and says, "Hey, I'm God," and it's like. Indisputable.
Yeah, yeah.
We will be open to it, right? You know, but
well,
you know,
we'll be open to something different is happening, right? Like if like I'm not going to
with all the due diligence. Yes, yeah. Okay.
I'm not going to necessarily say if something were written in the sky in some language that somehow everybody could read, like that'd be. I wouldn't necessarily say, "Oh, that's God," but I would be like, "That's fucking important," and we have to, and we can't ignore that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know what gets you to all powerful being that created it and sustains the universe, but I can certainly accept things if they're demonstrated.
I mean, that's a very good point, right? That's superior technology,
mm-hmm.
is indistinguishable from an omnipotent being.
Right.
That kind of thing. Sure. Okay. That wasn't the distinction I was trying to make. It was like, given the appropriate evidence, I am, and I presume you are, open to what the evidence leads to, not making assumptions, but with the appropriate five nines of whatever, you know?
Look, like I said, like I believe the skeptic is the most open-minded person out there, because you show good evidence and the skeptic is going to appreciate that and incorporate that into their worldview. The non-skeptic, the person who has who is decided on a way, is going to reject stuff even if it's openly demonstrated to them right away. So I think that, you know, the people always talk about skeptics being closed-minded, but it's the exact opposite.
It's just the new evidence isn't produced quick enough.
Well, the thing is that skeptics
they seem very
have a high bar. They have a high bar for evidence.
And they seem unchanging because of that high bar,
right? But there's plenty of things that I can, you know, in. I mean, we were talking. We had a couple things today that we were talking about, how things that we used to think are have you know, been changed by new ideas.
Yeah,
and and the other thing about skepticism is an understanding that it's really extraordinarily rare that our entire world gets turned up by something like that. That is not how this works. It's more like certain things you thought may be working a different way, or what you understood was a limit of some bigger theory. Like, for example, Newtonian gravity is a limit. Okay. I'm going to make a choice now. Newtonian gravity is the low energy limit of general relativity. You know, low energy limit of general relativity, it reduces right to Newtonian gravity. So that makes total sense. But then if you get into really high energy regimes like black holes or really close to very strong gravitational fields, then net general relativity is a better description. But Newtonian gravity gets you to the moon. Newtonian gravity is perfectly useful. Newtonian motion describes everything. Newtonian motion also, Newtonian dynamics fails when you get down to a certain level to size. Then quantum theory becomes a better theory. The quantum theory turns into Newtonian dynamics when you get past the de Broglie length. So there's a limit. There's just a limit to where these theories apply, and then other theories apply. It's not that these theories are wrong. So like when I had a discussion in my improv class with a person who has really weird beliefs, but that was my discussion. Like he said, Newtonian's all wrong because of quantum theory. I was like, no, Newtonian theory is not all wrong. Newtonian theory is perfectly correct
inside the scope.
Yeah, in the scope of what it's talking about. Mm-hmm. It's just that quantum theory is a better description when it gets to certain areas. And that is, yeah, and that took time for that to.
It comes down to the disconnect of what is truth or fact or mm-hmm. fact enough, right? Fact, because facts are only facts in the scope in which they need to be factual.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure those are the most elegant words I could pick, but those, like, if you're talking about a thing that is needs to be factual and provable in a Newtonian scope, then Newton works.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about something that needs to be factual and appropriate and correct in a quantum scope, then Newton doesn't work. So you need a different framework. And people need to remember that these are human representations of models to represent things.
So important to understand that like, what is the phrase? All models are false. Some are useful, and everything we do is described by some model that we have. So all models are false in some sense, but they're useful. They can be. But yeah, we have models. That's how physics works. Is we use math to make models of how things, and then we use that to describe.
Yeah. So Shannon, how things work, dynamics. That comes down to the actual reality of the universe that we're living in. We don't know. but we have equations and models and stuff that explain big chunks of it very, very accurately. But they also contradict other chunks at different scopes. And you have to pick the right model per the scope you're trying to figure out to make things work. And that helps us understand things. But do we understand everything? And is it possible to understand everything? I don't know.
I do. I don't think that...
I think it's impossible to understand everything.
Yeah, I think from a human perspective, it's probably impossible to understand everything. I think it's and I don't know whether they're like... That's the thing is like nature will be nature regardless of what you do it. But like... The universe is not applying the second derivative position when I push the accelerator on my car. Right? That's how I would describe it. That's how I would mathematically model it. And it would be extremely, extraordinarily accurate. But that's not what the universe is doing. The universe is just doing what it's doing. Nature is doing what it's doing. But that model really works extraordinarily well for describing things and for predicting things. So that model is extraordinarily useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, nature is doing its own shit, and we can't argue with nature. Nature won't listen.
Mm-hmm. One of the this ties back into something I want to say a little bit ago. I've been watching some different things on YouTube, and I forget the dude's name. He's a British guy who's probably in his like young 30s. He's a philosopher with the mustache. You know what I'm talking about?
Alex O'Connor?
Yes. And you know, he's interesting to listen to, especially being this like science-minding person, right? Because he's kind of more—he's not religious straight up, but a little bit. But he, you know. Anyway, he made this analogy of, you know, you piloting your body through this universe is kind of like flying an airplane only by instruments, and that really got me thinking, right? Like, you know, there's no windows. And like, so you got the instruments. So you like, look at that analogy, looking out the window versus flying by the instruments. You can kind of intuitively gauge like how much resolution you're losing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a counter argument to saying that your eyes are so fallible that the instruments might be better, but ignore that for a second and just take the gut feeling of how much resolution you're losing flying by the altimeter and the angle of attack guy and not being able to look out at the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... I don't think there's... I haven't been able to tie it back to science, but it's fascinating to me about how there's a philosophical part of, like, our experience is just going by the gauges.
Well, the argument here is, like, there's a part of this. It's like your instruments that are made for an aircraft have tight constraints here, designed specifically to work with aircraft. The instruments that we're using were designed by evolution and do not have very tight constraints. They were what worked. Mm-hmm. What worked given the material and the quick, pathways that were available.
Quick counter, don't you think people that designed airplanes picked the options that worked?
No, they did, but they had more space to work with something, right?
This play, that's good.
All right,
Buttercup. Mm-hmm. We love some building up Buttercups. Mm-hmm.
They had place to expand to different materials, like you could use you could find devices that have better better attractive magnetic fields. You could design levels that are going to work better than meat can in certain situations. Have better electrical conductivity than what meat can make, even over billions of years, just because the scope of available materials is different. Whereas evolution didn't have that; it has to work with meat, and it could only work with meat. And also only work with
random chance.
Yeah, chance and the available, stuff that the genetics that is available, that has been found and that is in the possibility space.
Yeah, there's no intentional design of like, right. Hey, wings would be really cool. Let's put some wings on a human. you know, where an airplane designer can be like, hey, ailerons are pretty cool. Let's use some ailerons.
Like, a good example is you're not going to see anything like a reptile or a mammal or anything sprouting up in a whole new pair of limbs that works right. Just because our entire musculature and our body has been built around four limbs, about being tetrapods. And in order for like two new limbs to appear, you have to have entirely new musculature and systematic stuff that would appear. And that's just not...
It's an improbable mutation.
It would take so long for something like that to develop.
Well, then that'd be... There'd be beneficial mutations.
You can get like
there.
You can get like an extra finger. That's just a little bit of extra musculature. That's not right. A problem. But you can't get entirely new arms and the whole
that little
way
finger.
That attaches to your body and
well,
and
sure.
Work.
What I'm saying is every tiny little step, right? Because you're not going to get a mutation that's going to give you a wing.
Right.
A mutation
yes, right.
is going to give you
a nub.
That nub actually has to be beneficial
in order for it to. It has to be either beneficial or completely benign. Right,
at best.
Yeah, at best. Because otherwise it won't propagate. Otherwise, the creature
takes so much energy to build that nub,
right.
And you starve, mm-hmm. You're not passing it on. Right?
Yeah.
So, Shannon, you good?
I'm good.
All right, because we're
just
getting kind of like sciencey and stuff.
I'm just
you hate
listening.
That shit.
We're not going into math shit.
It's not math. It's science. There's a difference, and I don't mind this. This is interesting.
I don't think I have any threads to tie that up. What do you got, Greg? I could use another one of these drinky drinks.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead and make some. I think I could handle another one.
All right.
Let's see.
Me too.
Let me think. I do write down some notes. So let's see if I have any interesting notes that I've written down recently. Because there's always stuff that I think about when I'm on my way here. And I'm like, and I never remember everything. So that's just bullshit. But hey, that's the use of it.
It's life.
Yep, that's right. That's life. That's life. That's life. Let's see. So we talked about like the power failures that I've had at your old house, my new house, which by the way, I'm loving it. It's
good.
Great.
Good.
I'm really enjoying it. It's a nice space for me.
Neighbors are quiet.
Very.
Good.
It's so different from the apartment. It's so different.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you across the street, the neighbors been?
No.
They've been quiet. So when it warms up, they might not be so quiet.
Okay.
Well, that's just like.
I'm okay like with that if it's
a party on the weekend.
Yeah. That is like, it's especially since when I go into like the bedroom, the noises goes away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the bedroom is very much isolated from the
it
rest.
It is.
Yeah. So that's important because if I want to get some sleep, I can get some sleep. Yeah, no, it's funny because there's it's been so cold. I haven't like done a lot of unpacking, so there's still like a lot of stuff that's just in boxes.
Yeah, no, but I saw the front porch when you came in.
Yeah, but I don't know that I'm going to do a whole lot of unpacking anyway, just because I realized cleaning out my last apartment like how I had a little bit of space, but I had so much crap that in some sense keeping it in the box is going to be just easier, and if I need something then I'll go and get for it, but there's so much space downstairs that I'm not going to use.
Label everything before you forget what's in the boxes.
That's a decent idea.
No, it's
but
important.
I do have a label maker, so I can do that.
That's very important.
Yeah, but like deciding what goes in the kitchen, like what's the stuff that should stay, what's the stuff that can go downstairs and like not ever come up unless I really really need it. And right now the air fryer is there, the microwave's there. I bought a new power strip.
Oh,
so
yeah,
that,
yeah.
So it doesn't trip all the time.
And the
power strip that old power strip is now used on a fan right next to the broiler that, in the living room, the oven.
Okay.
So a little fan that can pass the air because that's all. That, that won't ever trip the breaker. Which I don't know if Jeff told you, but I got a new thermometer thing for the inside.
For the stove?
Yeah.
The oven?
Yeah. You saw the little stove. Like, the stove has that, like, thermometer thing that goes on top of it and that never worked.
Yeah.
I got a new one.
Oh, nice.
It works now. So.
Nice. So you know the actual temperature of the inside of the oven.
Yeah. That's so if good. You wanted to use that, and I got it like most recently. So I used some like the most recent time when it was like super, super cold. I got it. It got up to 800 degrees. So that's
wow.
Yeah, that's hot. That was nice and hot. That was during the power failure. Yeah, because nothing else was working, and I wanted to get the heat up. And that's also when I brought out. You know, I brought it.
Sure.
What? You can keep that in there. I brought one at a time because I put in like I have these little like heat mats that I can, like the little packing heat stuff mm-hmm. like that you can get in case, but those are you know not awesome,
right?
They're just temporary. Heat.
They're good in a pinch.
Yeah, but I brought out like Penrose, and she was really cold. And then you know she warmed up on me, and she was really nice. Mm-hmm. And then I put her back, and then brought Fermi out. Fermi was also really really cold,
mm-hmm.
but I think they both really appreciated getting nice and warmed up.
Oh yeah,
by that fire.
Oh yeah,
and that yeah. So that was nice. I had a really nice time, even though not only did I have that, but I also had my phone and my iPad, so I could actually like watch videos. Like
yeah.
All while I was doing this.
I'll tell you, I do love the one thing that I really love about that house and I miss is the coal burning, you know, the wood stove. Because I definitely
use some of your wood, by the way.
Sitting there. Yeah. We don't need it. And
use the wood.
Okay. Yeah, just use it. It's just so nice and cozy. And when you put a fire in that wood burning stove, man, it just, I don't know. It's just,
it's such
a great feeling. It's relaxing and just, mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's a nice natural sort of heat. Uh-huh. And yeah, it's just, it's.
Crank it for just a couple logs.
Yeah, yeah. Throw a log or two in there and it gets really, mm-hmm. really hot. You can also like just, you can maintain it really a smoldering level. Mm-hmm. You just want that. No, it's nice, but it was definitely super useful when the power failure happened when it was 30 degrees outside. So that was really cool. Yeah, I don't imagine I'll be using it much in the summer, but that's cool. It's still cool to have that, and it could sub as a cooking station, but then again, I mean, like with the gas, it's okay.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter.
You don't need it.
But no, it was. It was really that because normally in those cases when I've as long as I've had reptiles I've been in the apartment and the apartment never got too low just because it was on mm-hmm. the second floor the heat would rise up so it never mm-hmm. got that cold.
Yeah,
I have that heater that's in there that you think the left of me that's nice, it keeps that at 65 in general, but when the power was out that place got cold.
Oh yeah.
And
it gets really, because there's nothing, it's open underneath there.
Yeah, there's no really insulation there. Mm-mm. And so those creatures were, you know, being reptiles, they were cold and they definitely appreciated to the level they appreciated the warmth that I was providing.
In the future, I don't expect you'll ever be without power for 18 hours again. In the future, if you're without power, let me know. We got the stuff for the camper. We got the EcoFlow, which is a big battery bank.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1,000 times bigger than the little guys you got. But then I have a generator that plugs into the EcoFlow. So if you're stuck and shit's not coming back because...
Shouldn't last like a day or two.
Because a tornado hit between you and the water treatment plant or something like that, then we have stuff to help you out.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to buy it. Now, if you are... You just want the peace of mind and want to have like an EcoFlow. I think a smaller one would be good for you, but
I think I'm okay because I mean, like you know, we'll see how you know over the course of a year what happens. But mm-hmm. I think also you know we've had some extreme weather events this year, and there was just the all that happened. That power failure was from a huge windstorm that hit, and just like all of Pittsburgh is surrounded by power lines that are next to trees. Uh-huh. So it just got all like cut and it was everywhere. So it was
what was that? It was some insane amount of people that were without power.
Yeah, it was like 100,000 people.
Yeah, it was definitely over 100,000 without wind power. Got
like over 80. Yeah. No, it was ridiculous. And I had enough stuff that I wasn't, you know, like I said, the only thing was just that night. And so I stayed up really late that night and was with my reptiles to warm them up at one point, just to mm-hmm. make sure that they, you know, they got through that night mm-hmm. By getting, you know, really nice and up to like 80 degrees. Cause yeah, then they'll be fine. If they had to stick with like 30 degrees for like over a day,
yeah,
that'd be really tough for them. But
yeah,
then, you know, I had those little pads, so they definitely rested on those pads. And so that was really nice. And I bought some, you know, another pack of 10 just so I have them. But it's just useful to have. But in the summer, it's not going to be necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be fine. It was just the
freezing. They'll love it out there in the summer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
They'll be nice and hot. Mm-hmm. Now, is your office, do you have your office set up in the room inside of that?
Yeah.
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 Where so, Tori's room used to be.
Right.
Yeah.
So that gets a little colder, but I like it colder. So that's cool. So that's good. Yeah. So it's the, you know, the living room with the new couch, which Jeff saw. Nice couch, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was out there. Couch, yeah. Slippers, all the whole nine yards.
Nearly two grand for that couch.
We'll have to go hang out with Greg sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do the show over there.
Yeah, the only thing is, like, now you guys have all these mics and shit, so it's, like, more stuff to bring. But we can definitely do a show at my place. It's, mm-hmm. you know, not a problem. But the kitchen is kind of still a work in progress in terms of, like, where I'm going to put everything. But I have a general workflow that works well.
Good.
Then, yeah, there's obviously the hallway, bedroom, office, and then reptiles on the porch mm-hmm. thing. And then upstairs is, right now, just storage and whatever.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to work on it a little bit because I think that's where my sister and probably I will sleep while my dad takes my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more likely. I think that's the easiest version rather than my dad walk upstairs and have to lean down and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But just, you know, I have an air mattress I can put up there, a queen air mattress, and mm-hmm. it should be fine.
Yeah. No, when Shannon's mom came, she slept in our bedroom and mm-hmm. we slept upstairs.
Yep.
And then when Tristan and Jesse came, they slept upstairs.
No. When Tristan came by himself, he slept upstairs. When Tristan and Jesse came, Tori wasn't living there and they slept in Tori's room.
Tori's bed.
Oh, I got something to talk about. I remember something. Cool. Okay. Recent Oscars. Have you seen any of those movies? Because I just recently watched a bunch of them.
I don't even know.
I watched The Best Picture winner, one battle after another, Sinners and Weapons.
Okay.
Of those, I kind of think my favorite was Weapons. Weapons was so... Weapons is like a... I guess you can call it a horror story, but it also has one of the greatest, like... just like an absolutely fucking amazing last act. And it's just it's a wonderful, creepy story. I think it's really, really good. Weapons, just my favorite of them.
What is it on?
What?
What?
Movie.
Oh, it's a
movie. Yeah,
but where can I watch it?
I have no idea. You know how I get movies.
Oh, that's right.
Shut up, Alexa.
We can watch Weapons on HBO Max, apparently.
Cool. You should totally do it. Weapons is so good.
Cool.
And just such a wonderful, like, just the code, the release of the end is amazing. One battle after another was good. It's Paul Thomas Anderson. It won the Best Picture. I think it was really good. I think that Sinners probably should have won Best Picture, but I understand why it didn't. Sinners was the better movie of the two, I think. But Sinners also has this... I mean, Sinners has... There's a weird genre aspect to it that I won't go into in case you ever want to watch it. But there's a weird, like, genre thing that happens that you don't... that isn't expected, but is not overplayed. in the sense that it totally makes sense, and the themes all fit with what it's going for. But there is a sort of genre aspect that kind of twists it in a certain direction, whereas One Battle After Another is very straightforward.
Yeah.
But still a good story. But I think Sinners was better made, and there are things in Sinners that are like more wonderful than One Battle After Another. But One Battle After Another was just a sort of a more straightforward and interesting movie. But still, like,
Paul Thomas Anderson. What was the last one? One
Battle After Another.
Okay.
Paul Thomas Anderson, but like Leonardo DiCaprio's in it, and who else? There's plenty of people in it, but I'm trying to think of if there's any like other like recognizable star you'd pick up. And I'm sure there is, but I'm not thinking right now because...
Well, all three of those are available on all the streamers. I mean, they cost money probably, but be able to watch them.
Yeah, so. No, I think that they're all good movies, but Weapons was my favorite of them by far.
Okay.
Weapons is just delightful. Just in like, not like, I mean, I'm not saying that the movie is just, you're happy all the time. I'm like, yeah, I was smiling, but like... When you appreciate what that movie did, how it's constructed, it's just so good.
And I haven't seen good movies in a while. I'm really going to check out these three.
Yeah.
What we've been watching lately, it's probably not up your alley, but Shrinking on Apple TV.
I love that show.
What's that about?
It's a show about therapists. Harrison Ford. And Jason Segel.
Mm-hmm.
And Jessica Williams are the main characters.
Okay.
And there's there's several other characters I recognize. I can't think of the actual actors' names right now. But it's...
Well, it's got, what's his name? Michael J. Fox is on there.
Michael J. Fox, really?
Yeah, he's no, still acting, he, yeah? he, well, it's partial, well, part-time, you're very ahead. Part-time.
You're jumping ahead a lot.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I mean, but he's a...
So Harrison Ford plays a therapist who is going through Parkinson's.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
In several seasons, you know, sure. Further down the road, Michael J. Fox plays a cameo as a person with Parkinson's.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why he's on there.
That makes sense.
He is, yes, but in a specific reason, because he's playing to his strengths.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like? It's one of those shows that's funny but has heart, you know, almost like a Judd Apatow kind of movie or something like
that.
Or
a show kind of like 30-year-old virgin, like that kind of
Freaks and Geeks, something like that. There's a lot of heart. I'd say it's high enough for you to give it a try.
Uh-huh.
Whether you like it, I can't guarantee it, but I know how you are with those kinds of shows.
I'm picky.
Yeah.
I'm a picky son of a bitch.
But it's enjoyable. The jokes in the heart are like, because you'll be laughing and you'll be crying like in just a few minutes.
Laugh or cry? I mean, like, to me, you know, my favorite sitcom is Community. My favorite, like, but probably my favorite TV show is Community.
Yeah.
I think that had a lot of heart to it, but was also exceptionally funny and had exceptionally funny performers on it doing great stuff. And they put in so much fucking effort to make that show. That show was effort in, like, persona. Or, like, there was so much work going in. Like, and they did that. I do think it's an important thing about creativity. When you make something creative, it takes you so you can do the work, I guess, at 90% and really good. It's 50% more work to get it to 95%. But that 5% is so evident. Like, you can totally tell how much work was put in, I really appreciate when that bunch of extra work is put in just to raise it up a little bit. And that, I think, that is Community, like, in a nutshell, is that they did the extra work. Always did the extra work. Except for season 4. But Dan Harmon was fired. But just the amount of work put in to make that show work and to tighten everything up. So it's just a fucking balls of perfection. Yeah.
It's a different kind of hard for shrinking. Give it a try. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, you should just check it out.
I'll check it out.
It has Krista Miller.
She was in Trust.
And she plays a very much the same kind of character. Okay. So you get Krista Miller doing Krista Miller. Greg Goldstein is in it. He's the guy from Ted Lasso.
I watched a few, one or two of the episodes of What Is This All About? And my sister loved it.
He plays the asshole soccer player. But he plays
He plays such a great character.
Not a spoiler, but so in Shrinking, Jason Segel plays this character whose wife was killed by a drunk driver, and he has a whole year of just being fucking hookers and being low and just being awful. And he has a teenage daughter, which was raised by Liz, you know, Krista Miller, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, the guy that killed his wife is the Brad Goldstein character. And they make
the drunk driver. How?
Drunk driver.
Okay. Not like...
No, drunk driver.
Accident. Drunk driver. And, you know, they, you know, there's a whole arc where he gets past the trauma of that and, you know, helps the person, you know, like, there's, it's not a superficial kind of show.
Yeah, that's fine. I appreciate that. Yeah. Where real arcs happen, real character happens. I can appreciate that.
That being said, one of my there's tons of laugh out loud moments, but there's this scene. I love this isn't even an inside callback. But the Harrison Ford character walks into the room.
So how does Harrison Ford on most of the things he's done recently?
He's fantastic.
No, he's really into it. He plays Parkinson's and he plays a feeble old man. He walks into the room after a good day.
He
walks in and goes, dun da 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 da. It was just like so good because it wasn't like super over the top and it was easy. It's not like not everyone who watched it.
It was a shout out but not a like, hey, I'm doing Indiana Jones here. Yeah.
But what I do, what I want now is a way more low-key concert. Like, just as like underhanded, like no one's gonna pick it up. Han Solo.
How do you know that hasn't happened yet?
I don't.
I mean, has he gone through anything in 12 Carsons?
He hasn't gone through 12 Carsons. That'd be a joke. That'd be the easy joke.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, when he walks in, he goes, he's just in a good mood. He's like, dun dun dun.
Depending on what would be a subtle Han Solo joke. And one of them could be
laughing up for a bone or something.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Laughing up for a bone. No, I just like knowing the other characters in the show, I think the laugh it up for a bone. I'm talking to Jason Segel's character or to Dombey's character. You got a ways to go,
you ought to be crazy. This is weird right there.
That's why I think you'll appreciate the show.
They're also a family, like, the heart is in the whole thing, right? And like, he's the reluctant guy who doesn't want to grow the heart for the stuff. And then Elizabeth, the Christina Miller character, kind of, and she plays this like sociopath and butting into everyone's business, just like in Scrubs, right? Same character, getting everyone's business, but she has heart, and like she gets the curmudgeon to open up.
Again, Community was a show with so much heart, even though these were awful characters in certain cases. There's so much heart that like. The whole message of the show was even screwed up people can be good and we should appreciate it. It was kind of the opposite of the message of Rick and Morty, which is that everyone's fucked up, the world sucks.
Here's a question.
The universe is terrible.
Have you tried to teach your niece of like critical pop culture? culture references, anything like that. No? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think, like, what do I need to, like, make sure my kids know? I mean, it's...
Okay. Did I try? At one point, I was like, I tried to get her to watch Star Wars. I tried to get her to watch some Star Trek. It's like, these are important cultural milestones.
Yeah. How old is she?
She's graduating college.
How old was she when you were trying to do this?
Oh, she was like,
yeah. Yeah.
So I've had these conversations with Max and Allie a little bit. Max actually seems kind of open to, like,
I don't think, at this point, I'm like, whatever culture you get in Rasmus, because that is what's going to carry on in UN. And I do not feel the need to pass all the shitty parts of my culture and all the little shit that I liked is that necessarily what everyone should like. Like, again, love community. I don't think that it's a great show for everyone. I don't think it's the perfect show for me. It's a show that perfectly reflects what I love about this kind of, you know, drama and comedy and how it's done.
You've never seen Community, huh?
Yeah, some. I didn't watch all of it. I never got into it.
You should watch it.
No. I never got into it.
When did you try to get into it? When I like your remotes and I'm like, you should watch this? Or is that done together?
I
would
say my sister was not a fan. At the end of every season, she liked one episode, the Chaos Theory episode. And I told her to watch the episode that we watched together first. I said, this is my favorite episode. It was the conspiracy theory episode. I told her to watch that. I said, if nothing else, watch this episode. And she messaged me back, I loved it. I fucking loved it. And I was like, yeah, no, this show is great. And then Jesse, my nephew, got into it. Maybe because of the Chaos Theory episode. But she started watching it with him, and she got a huge amount. I do think it's I was already like a Dan Harmon fan, kind of on one shit, like how we construct the story and shit like that beforehand. So I was like, crying for kids. But I think that if you watch it enough, the beats are great and the characters are so well done and the actors so fantastic. Like, I think you'll agree. I mean, like, every single actor on the show does such a great job. And the writing, like I said, is so tiny that I don't see how a person... I can appreciate it. Look, a person doesn't like it. They don't like it. Whatever. You know? And then my opinion doesn't go the world. But I find it hard to believe that somebody can watch Community, like, enough of Community, like,
I don't remember asking you to watch Community. I do remember asking you to watch Community.
Yeah. Well, that's because I don't like what's his name. I'm not a fan of him.
I hate Chevy Chase. Chevy Chase is a Community.
I don't like to dance him, so I could never get into the difference.
I mean, Ted Danson plays a way different character in Good Place than he does. Like, I don't like Kevin Spacey, but I still like Usual Suspects. But hey, you know, like I said, it's your opinion, and it doesn't matter. Like, it's like a taste bud. What you taste, how you taste it, is your own, and you don't have to accommodate fucking anybody. Your choice.
Well, I mean, I'm willing to give it a chance again. I have no idea what state of mind I was in, and I think that plays a lot into how you.
I know, yeah. That you're like, I remember, like, my brother-in-law, huge fan of Big Lebowski. I was like, yeah, I'll watch it. Give it. Suck. And then, you know, I come talk to him about it. Came in and I watched it again, maybe a year ago. I was like, oh, it's a shiny dog's book. And what that means is just there's no point to it. It doesn't like resolve in any way. It's just it's like
I'm not a huge fan of the house. There's some scenes that are funny, you know, like especially like the super clips of Joe Goodman saying,
"But it's
fussy, Johnny." You know,
like, it's just a living in this world for a bit and don't really care about the story. You know? Don't expect shit to get resolved. Don't expect shit to. And once I appreciated on that level, I could appreciate more what was going on with the family and all that stuff. I got much more appreciation for it the second time. My wife, I was like, oh, I see what is enjoyable and what's really likable about this. And you know, maybe that's not a fair comparison because The Big Lebowski is a lot of people's favorite movie. It's not like something that a lot of people are like, it's a piece of shit. It's a movie that like a lot of people really like, and it took a second watching for me to get an appreciation. But it was something that once I got in the right mindset, I could appreciate.
Yeah.
Not that I would love like a whole bunch of movies of that. I mean, but then again, the Coen Brothers have made some of my favorite movies. Fargo is up there in one of my favorite movies.
The first season of Fargo TV show.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But one episode of Fargo does not equal a movie, right? And you know, the experience of a movie is different from a season of TV. And I do think that the Fargo movie is just a fantastic, well-composed movie that also has so much dimensionality to it and so much character and so much work done on it. That extra work, again, closing there. Another movie that I love for them is No Country for Old Men. I remember like not being totally in, like not being in the mood for it, but still loving because it was just like, man, this is just really fucking good. Like, it's really fucking good. Even though I was just not in the mood for it at the time, but it still like stuck with me and just so well done. I just have to sort of like surrender to this. You know, all right, Tyron, you got me. Beat me. Move me. I'm just sitting back and letting you go.
Came up a little bit ago. Did you see it in the theater?
I did.
I think I did.
And have you ever seen it since?
No. However, I will say, I was not super into the movie, but I did think the last 5 minutes was super fucking scary and effective. It sticks in my mind. The image of just the one guy standing in the corner, just staring at the corner while shit's happening, and all he's doing is staring at the wall. That it was so effective. So I'm willing to give that movie like props for being a paradigm shift, a change in the way
you have to give a props for several things, but like marketing it at, you know, like the whole. We don't know what the fuck happened.
Yeah.
We only knew that once or twice.
Well, it's sort of similar to, I think Clerks is not a very good movie, but it's funny and I appreciate it a lot. Is it a good movie? No. Is it funny as hell? Like, especially when I was younger, yes. And did it change things in cinema? Yeah, I think it had an effect. I don't think Kevin Smith is a great director. I think he's an amazing storyteller. Like, if you would listen to him talk to him, I think he's so good at that. I don't think he's a great director, but I do think that, like, that movie played a role in what movies are now, and I think that Blair Witch, the same way, played a role in what movies are now.
The Clerks doesn't bang on every cylinder, but it's pretty good. And, like,
I don't think that my niece or my nephew is going to watch Clerks stand and think it's as awesome as it was when we saw it. Partially because some of the lessons from Clerks, the better lessons, were learned by other filmmakers who made better movies.
But also the vibe, the day-to-day of Clerks.
Clark's doesn't right. exist.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It just seems like an old movie.
And that's not the same. But look, you watch a movie like Casablanca and it's timeless. Right?
There's not that many like that, though.
No, but they exist.
Yeah, they do.
Jurassic Park is a
timeless movie. That is. So it's Twister.
Yeah. I've never seen it. I don't know. Jurassic Park, I think, is just a timeless movie. And I do think, is it the best movie that we've ever made? No. Is it the best blockbuster ever made? No. Did it change the game for how blockbusters are made? Absolutely. Like, I... In the sense that I almost feel like there's a cutoff between movies before Jurassic Park and after Jurassic Park. Like when CGI became something that was incorporated into things. Jurassic Park is that cutoff. Because it was the realization that, oh, if you take CGI and use it right, it works. And Jurassic Park, remember, doesn't have a lot, doesn't have a huge amount of CGI. It has CGI, but most of that's publisher. So much of that though is practical. I think it has maybe like 12 minutes of effect shots. Whereas if you look at like the latest Avengers movie, and there's not a move, there's not a scene with it. So
yes, was watching.
some bullshit. In terms of some bullshit, like I enjoyed the second season of Fallout in the sense that it was fun and stupid and not at all like challenging. And just if you want just something that is mindless, unchallenging, and it was fine. But I think there's so much shit that can fill that I don't recommend it. Just, it's like, you know,
I'm with you. I watched the Fallout season and it was underwhelming. It was not
an objective.
Sure, but also the
biggest problem I have with that is like the longevity of peoples in that show, right?
Who gives a shit? Like it's a fantasy fucking world. Like it's a comic book world. Right, I don't.
You're saying like what bugs you? It's like okay, fine.
No, yeah, okay, fair enough.
Story,
fair
but
enough.
It's like okay.
But I'm just saying like what my opinion
Walton
is
Goggins doing his thing, and he's been around for 250 years, mm-hmm. and it's like why? Why stretch that out? Why do
no,
that?
No, he's got the fucking radiation bullshit, like that makes the fucking Death Stalker or something. Like that's also bullshit mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. But whatever, because it's a fantasy world. It's like Star Wars, right? I mean, it's like yeah, it you know, lightsabers can't exist.
I guess, but the longevity thing bugs me. Bugs me.
Did I tell you about my Star Wars? Like, I must have told you this, but my Star Wars. Theory is not the right word for it, but my Star Wars
rant?
Like no it's not a rant either, it's more of like a
hypothesis
justification. How can you justify a Star Wars world in the real world? And my idea was that the Force is electromagnetism and everything in Star Wars is really really tiny. Then it makes sense that electromagnetism has a large range, that you can do things like destroy a bunch of planets in a system with one beam. I don't know exactly how lightsabers would work, but I probably think you can come up with something. But like some sense of like in the real world, how could any of this shit work? And it's like everything's extraordinarily tiny, and that's what hyperspace is and all that other shit.
All right, well, I gotta piss. We done? We gonna keep going?
I'm tired.
All right.
Bye,
everybody.
Good night.